365 days a year.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of Money Talk. I'm Neil Kreisel and Diane Duver are your hosts every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 11 and Saturdays at 6. We're brought to you by Broadview Mortgage, whose highly trained and experienced team takes great pride in helping people with home financing, offering competitive rates and a wide array of loan programs. And Arnaldi's Cafe, one of Santa Barbara's oldest and most intimate restaurants since 1937, located on the corner of Olive and Cota Street in downtown Santa Barbara. And Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm in Santa Barbara, providing its clients with the personal care and attention of a small independent firm, coupled with the vast resources of a major financial institution.
Hi, Neil. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. There's nothing in the news this week, was there? Because we don't have any
articles. No news, right?
There was no news.
But, you know, before we get started on articles, if you'd like to reach us, we'd love to take your call. Feel free to give us a call at 564-1290 and or you could email us at moneytalk1290@gmail.com.
And are we on Facebook by any chance?
We are, and we're on Facebook at moneytalk1290. Look us up.
So the first article we have is entitled, from this is from Saturday's Wall Street Journal, Investors Believe in Magic. In one recent survey, wealthy individuals said they expect their portfolios to earn a long-term average of 8.5% annually after inflation. With bonds yielding roughly 2.5%, a typical stock and bond portfolio would need to grow at 12.5% annually to hit that overall 8.5% target. Net of fees and inflation, that would require approximately doubling the 7% annual that stocks have produced over the long term. And the article goes on to say that there is a reason why so many investors believe in magic, and is that they can't handle the truth. The efficient market hypothesis holds that stock prices fully reflect all the relevant information that is available. What if instead investors are so efficient at avoiding some information that they might as well not exist? Psychologists call this behavior information avoidance. By the way, this could be true for a lot of our voters.
It's true. It's funny. When I read this article, I couldn't help when you said, you can't handle the truth. A few good men with a... Who was it? I'm the worst with the stars. But when he sat there and said, you can't handle the truth, you know?
So the Vanguard did a study looking at their computer, and found that investors check the value of their financial assets much less frequently on average in down markets. And this is called the ostrich effect. Investors would spare themselves embarrassment and loss by confronting information instead of hiding from it. So what this is saying is that people have an expectation that is supported by their belief system rather than empirical evidence, invest and then don't look at bad investment results because it would make them feel that they failed.
Well, what I think is interesting, though, about that article is he does say that if the way of going about putting your head in the sand like an ostrich is if you did that throughout good times and bad times, it would make you a much better investor because you would be able to handle the drawdowns of markets, which most people can't, and then it causes them to make bad decisions at the wrong time.
Right, because what happens is, and this is...
It's driven emotionally instead of by data.
Well, and the proof of this is for the last 75 years, and this is an incredible statistic, the average mutual fund investor did worse than the average mutual fund.
Now, because they're... They're constantly...
Excuse me. My name's Fred Schumann, and I'm a guest coming on shortly. But that investor did much worse. He earned 2% a year in a world where earnings were 9 to 11%. And that's strictly from his inability to be able to tolerate either the successes or the failures. And that's one of the great mistakes.
Typically what people do is they have a bad year, they ask their friend who had a good year, and they follow that friend who had a good year, and that friend had a portfolio manager that got lucky the year before.
Well,
and
it's constantly investing in that rearview mirror.
Peter Lynch lost more money for his investors after 20 years than he made in 19 years because so many people invested at the high before the big decline relative to the number of people who invested when it was a dollar and before it went to 2 and 10 and 50.
Is that with Magellan?
Yes.
Yeah. So
you know, it's amazing. The there's commercials on TV now for a couple of the brokerage houses that say we have lower rates and this permits you to do it yourself. But the empirical evidence suggests doing it yourself is not a very successful endeavor. It would be like operating on yourself. And there is a commercial of a guy putting a knife in his stomach, and he's saying, you know, I can do this because I have the right to do my own investing.
Right.
But the idea of, you know, being your own doctor is not any more absurd than being your own investment advisor.
Tell me if this is off the piste here. I don't want to. But what you're talking about is now known as behavioral finance. And behavioral finance, I sent every employee of mine to a four-day course in Cambridge that was done by University of Chicago, Yale, Princeton, and Harvard. And it's just on behavior in finance that, frankly, if you can buy a dime for a nickel, you would think that always works. And it always does work. It just doesn't work all the time. But because of behavioral finance, which causes people to screw up a good idea almost inevitably, and that's a whole new science.
Well, just to our listeners know, we don't share the articles beforehand with our guests, but Fred is very prescient because the next article is exactly on that point. And the godfather of Smart Beta, Bob Arnott, who was a guest of ours a couple of months ago, had a interesting paper that he wrote basically criticizing himself. And he talked about the fact that people are showing a blind eye to investing in strategies that he invented because so many people are doing it, everyone's plowing in and doing it, that they become too expensive. And one of the interesting things about this article is the whole notion that he is willing to tell his many followers that he is not able to be perfect, which is a trait that very few people have. And Fred Schumann, who's our guest, is going to tell you about something he did, which is really amazing in terms of having the guts to do that as well. But what Rob Arnott has said, that you can't time markets, he said, you can't pick tops and bottoms, but you can identify what's trading cheaply based on its history and how expensive it is. And at the end of the article, which I thought was really interesting, they had a quote by Mr. Bogle, who was the founder of Vanguard, who criticized him being so arrogant. And he said, he's criticizing Arnott. And he said, I wish I was as sure of anything as he is of everything.
Well, what I think is really funny about that is, you know, the reason why Smart Beta or Rob Arnott's white paper, yeah. Rob was actually an academic before he got into this. Mm. And he still is an academic in all instances of the word, but really who challenged him was, he basically, Vogel said he was full of it. That would never work. Like, put your money where your mouth is. And Rob actually put together some financing and brought it out. And that's what we have today.
Yeah. And the next article we have, the final article, is about Jack Bogle, coincidentally. This week.
Talk about self-serving. This one is like ridiculous.
It's all this article. And basically, Vogel goes on to say that in the long run, mutual fund firms that focus on active management, that is picking stocks, will likely be forced to fundamentally change their business structure because the industry has benefited over the years with a strong market return that's unlikely to repeat itself, and that unless they wake up and do what he does, they're all going to go out of business. And this is what I find so interesting, is because the fact is that if everybody took the advice of Bogle and invested in index funds, the efficient market theory would say that it's no longer efficient because no one is doing fundamental research, and all of a sudden there'd be opportunities to be a stock picker because all of a sudden everyone would be buying the same thing and there would be opportunities. So ironically, the more people take on what Bogle suggests is indexing, the more down the road opportunities there may be for traditional stock pickers.
Well, and I think one could even argue that we're at that point now as index funds and ETFs have really moved up in the amount of money that they're managing. Like when you even look at that article, Vanguard, of the $44 billion that they manage or something along those lines, more than it's like two-thirds of it is passive versus the the third that is actively managed. And so it's just interesting that that article that he came out to say was so self-serving, it was hard to take, I took it with a grain of salt.
But if you ran $400 billion, you could be self-serving too. It's one of the benefits.
True.
You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
For prospective homebuyers, one of the most important steps of the loan process is getting clear and honest information from someone who will speak plainly and truthfully about loan programs and options.
Hello, I'm Kelly Marsh, the branch manager of Broadview Mortgage in Santa Barbara, where our highly skilled and experienced team takes great pride in helping clients obtain home financing with honest, knowledgeable, fast, friendly, and efficient service. As a Santa Barbara area native who has spent the past 19 years in the mortgage industry and has closed over 4,000 loans, I'd appreciate the opportunity to earn your business and invite you to visit BroadviewSB.com or call my office at 805-563-1100 to learn more about how Broadview Mortgage can help you determine the best way to manage mortgage debt to achieve a more stable financial future.
Licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act, license number 813G136, NMLS number 170528, an equal housing lender.
If you have trouble handling your anger, get help. If someone you love is hurting or scaring you, get help. There is a full-service domestic violence agency in Santa Barbara County, which offers emergency shelter, counseling, transitional housing, anger management, and teen outreach programs. Its name is Domestic Violence Solutions for Santa Barbara County. Call their 24-hour helpline at 964-5245. Domestic Violence Solutions for Santa Barbara County, putting an end to domestic violence.
Did you know that domestic violence sends more than 500 women and children to emergency shelters every year? There is a place where all family members affected by domestic violence can get help. Domestic Violence Solutions for Santa Barbara County, with four 24-hour phone lines to help. In Santa Barbara, call 964-5245. In Santa Maria, call 925-2160. In Lompoc, call 736-0965. And in Santa Ynez, call 686-4390.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Broadview Mortgage. Since 1988, a mortgage banker and direct lender that believes in providing in-depth loan consulting to its customers in a personalized and honest manner.
And we are thrilled to have in studio with us today Fred Schumann, who's the chairman of Archstone Partners. Thanks for being here with us.
My pleasure.
So let's tell us a little bit about your early life and what got you interested in investing.
I became interested in investing by default, and that's because my family business went out of business. And we were shoe manufacturers in New England. There were 775 shoe factories in New England the year I graduated. There are two today. They both lose money. The textile industry had done that act right before the shoe business and probably many more before that. So I was left... I had been a disc jockey for a number of years in Boston.
So you're right at home here
so
now.
So I was well recognized. I had a good education, and there were two ways to make money. One was real estate, the other was investing. So I went, I think I was the only person to go into stock brokering out of my graduating class. And I went to work for a firm in Boston, then known as L.F. Rothschild & Company, now out of business. And started in this business. Curiously, the question you didn't ask is I was not especially good at it. I look back at my graduate paper analyzing a stock, and I got a C+. But but what I was good at is hearing through the ears of the people I was speaking to and hearing what they heard and understanding what they really meant. And as Neil said before, we all know simple facts, like the market has been going up for a long time. We all know that every decade since 1950, there's been a confiscatory event. You never know when it's coming or where it's coming from. We know we're in the eighth year now without a confiscatory event. you know that things are much more expensive than they were. The last time I really, and this is not understanding stocks, I really invested a lot in stocks was in 2009. And all I did was pick 10 stocks, the names of which I recognized, that had yields of over 5%, and I knew to be good companies. Home Depot, Conoco, Verizon, I mean, Pfizer. This wasn't, this really wasn't rocket science. And here, 8 years later, they are all doubles and triples, and they have paid 5% dividends or more. That opportunity will come again. Now, if you make an initial investment in what we were just talking about, an ETF today, and you are not a pension fund with a 50-year horizon, you are going to be confronted with some very unpleasant times. And when you do open up your statement, you're going to ask yourself, how much can I tolerate? And the things that make a bottom are when there's all sellers and no buyers. That's a bottom. You get an air pocket. Things that make a top is when there's all buyers and no sellers. It seems to me that if you're a betting investor, that since November 9th to today, you'd have to say that there's been an enormous number of buyers, probably the Trump constituency who was left out of the prosperity and left the market in 2008, coming back now at twice the price of Warren Buffett buying when there's blood in the streets in 2009.
But let's get back to 2009, because I remember, and you are a New Yorker as well by choice. You weren't born there, but you were a New Yorker. And I remember—
You're just going to pretend like you didn't come from Boston? I remember— In Neil's mind, he's a New Yorker.
A mutual friend of Fred and mine said to me he was offered a penthouse apartment in the San Remo. And for those of you who are not from New York, San Remo is one of the prestigious buildings in New York. And I asked him what he was going to pay for. He said $1. Because the maintenance was so high, no one wanted it, and there was a personal liability. And I thought for a minute, and I said, don't buy it. It's too expensive for a dollar. Mm-hmm. Now, the apartment's probably worth $30, $40 million today. And that's— I point correct. That out because when Fred said he bought 10 stocks, it sounds like a simple thing to do. It's very, very, very hard to do something positive when the world's coming to an end. So behavioral psychology is not just people who put their head in the sand. It's people that pick up their head and look too hard and see just disaster around them. So to be able to buy in a down market is probably one of the most difficult things to do.
Absolutely. And through that time, I had clients that had a hard time getting back in. They, not that they got out, but they'd build up cash from their monthly savings or whatever they were doing, and they just couldn't ever bring themselves to come back and say, yes, I want to invest. And the problem with that is the time to invest was March 9th of 2009. It was the lowest point of the market. And so a lot of what my job is to do an upfront of what can you tolerate. Mm. And it's interesting, those clients that we went together through 2008, 2009, I have a much stronger notion of how they react in that downward time. It was difficult. It was difficult for these people, for myself included, you know, dealing with all these people and their total wealth of saying, okay, well, what does this do to your future? It will not impact it if you can stay disciplined and at the table.
And 15
and it
year,
helps to be prepared.
And 15, yes, 20 years ago, the solution to this was a thing called a hedge fund. That was supposed to be able to beat the market. So, Fred, tell us what a hedge fund is.
Well, a hedge fund is now a nomenclature that doesn't no longer represent what it is. But hedge funds started in 1947 by Alfred Jones, whose son-in-law, Bob Birch, still runs A.W. Jones & Company. And the first transaction they did was General Motors had just introduced Hydromatic. Hydromatic was a way of that you no longer had to shift your car. It was automatic transmission. And A.W. Jones thought that General Motors would prosper versus the other seven or eight automobile companies. But we had just come out of the war, and A.W. Jones wasn't at all sure that there wouldn't be other things like the need to buy a house like Levittown and taxes and all manner of things that might have been bad for the automobile industry. So we came up with the idea of buying one stock and selling short its closest equivalent. And therefore, his bet was only that Hydromatic was good. It wasn't a bet on automobiles being good or interest rates being good or the war not coming back. It was just a bet that for the cars that were sold, more of them would be General Motors cars than other cars. And he was able, because of the money that he got from selling short, to buy twice as much General Motors, because he got that money from the sale of the short, as he would ordinarily buy. So it was a research-intensive strategy. That is hedging. And the business I ran is 100% hedged. What hedging tends to do is take out the volatility. And if you take out the volatility, people stay with investing for a lot longer. I can remember, I'm 77, I can remember going to the movies on Saturday, getting popcorn and a double feature for a quarter. So I don't forget that things do inflate. It's people who mess that up. If you can stay for the ride, you're going to do okay. And the way to stay for the ride is not to be frightened into doubling or tripling your investment or frightened into selling your investment. So hedging started as a very excellent way to do that. After that,
explain to us what Hedgestone Partners does.
Artstone Partners was it started in 1990. It was the seventh fund of hedge funds in existence. And through my experience in the business, I started in 1963, and some mathematical observations, I was able to convince people that you could put together a group of hedged funds. In my case, they were 12.
So Archstone took in the investment dollars, and then you did the due diligence and analysis
in the funds
on which hedge funds to include.
The funds were meant to offset each other, but with such an aperture of skill that the difference would be a profit. We thought that the key determinant of how much profit was interest rates. And very simply, your listeners will get this in a minute, if interest rates are 5%, you're not going to take your money out of a treasury bill at 5% unless you think you can make 15, because you know you're not going to be right all the time. But when interest rates are 0 or 1%, you might take your money out for 3%. And at 3%, the margin of error is very small. So in late 70s, Dick Nye and George Baker, who were two guys at Goldman Sachs, got permission from the Labor Department to charge incentive fees for nonprofits, and a whole industry burgeoned, which changed the definition of hedge funds. Hedge funds now became just a way to get 20% of the profits. You didn't get...
Plus the 2% fee, right?
Well, in my day, there was a 5% hurdle rate. So okay. You didn't get anything until you made over a certain amount. You never made it until you were at a new all-time high. The fees were incidental. So this is the abuse that's developed.
Yeah, but let's just talk about that for a minute, because it's not really abuse. If you think about one thing, if you only have 10 or 15 or 20 hedge funds and you have a world of investors and there are certain people that are smarter than other people, the idea of paying these people excessive money in the early days resulted in really good performance because these people were better.
Well, we weren't meant to perform. We earned 19.5% a year for 10 years.
And let me add one more thing. What Archstone did is, if you think about Fred's earlier description of hedge funds, being a vehicle where you can take an idea and create some safety with that idea by hedging. He was like double hedged. You know, it was like, you know, it was like that scene in Animal House where they say you're in double probation, double, triple probation. What he did is he bought 12 or now 16 hedge funds. And so you had each hedge fund alone was hedging, and now he bought 16 of them, so you had the diversification of 16 others. So it was sort of like you getting double the hedging.
It's exactly, it's a diversified hedging strategy.
So,
and if you're and if you're confused about that, we'll be right back. You're listening to Aha, be looking to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB.
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Hi. I'd like to report a bear hug.
Okay.
Well, before I left my campsite, I was putting out my fire, and out of nowhere, Smokey Bear showed up and hugged me?
So you drowned the fire, you stirred it, drowned it again, and felt that it was cold?
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah. He likes it when people correctly put out their campfires. He's pretty big on wildfire prevention. He's just letting you know you did good. With a hug. He's a hugger.
I just got a bear hug from Smokey Bear. Status update!
All right, I'm gonna let you go now. I've got a lot of ranger stuff to do. There are many ways to start a fire, but one sure way to put it out. Learn how you can do your part at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Sponsored by the U.S. Forest Service Ad Council and your state forester.
Come play at Ealing's Park, whether it's by yourself, as a team, with your dog, on your bike, or soaring through the sky. Come play anytime, any day. For over 25 years, the Ealing's Park Foundation has been dedicated to maintaining this beautiful open space and creating a place for the entire community to come play. Ealing's Park is a remarkable environmental example of what is possible when people care about the best parts of their community and take ownership of wonderful facilities like our park. Ealing's Park receives no financial support from any aspect of government and is completely self-supporting. So come visit the park today and support Santa Barbara's largest nonprofit park. Join the many Santa Barbarans saying, Ealing's is my park, and make it your park too. For information, call 569-5611. That's 569-5611. Or visit online at www.ealingspark.org. That's ELINGSPARK.org.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence.
And we are thrilled to have in the studio the chairman of Archstone Partners, which is a fund-of-fund hedge fund, Fred Schumann. Thanks for being here. And before the break, we were talking about hedge funds and what they are and what Archstone specifically does. And so, you know, it's been a rough few years for the hedge fund industry as a whole in alternative investments. What happened, and do you see that changing?
That's a complicated question. Neil is going to set this up, but on April 14th, I sent out a letter to all of my investors, many of which have been with us for a long time. Just got a letter from a woman who's been with me for 50 years.
Wow.
She's 93 years old. She asked me, what am I going to do? I said, as soon as I figure it out, I'll tell you, no charge. what happened basically, firstly, was the decline in interest rates. These are smart people, and they're not going to put their money at risk if they can't make money. Now, it also became, during the luxurious years that you were referring to, I forget if it was on air or off air, of enormously high fees, 2 and 20 became
right.
The standard, that it was a good business if you gathered enough assets. So, and investors, the ones with enormous amounts of money, if all they could get was 1 or 2% with safety or 3% in a bond, and they thought they could get 7 or 8% taxes were not considered because they were nonprofits. That was a good deal. And money flooded in. But the individual investor couldn't make out in that situation. The individual investor was getting 3 or 4%, after fees was getting 2 or 3%. So that was the first thing that went wrong. Secondly was just the sheer size. The third was ETFs. I hate to put the blame on something that's been the major development in the marketplace today, but an ETF simply is a giant wave that overwhelms the individual smaller fish in the pond. Meaning, you buy a stock, you like it very much, you've studied it. It's a drug stock of which there are 200. Billions of dollars buy drug ETFs. Hillary Clinton in her campaign comes out and says, we're going to force the price of drugs down if I get elected. People sell their ETF. All 500 stocks get sold, including your gem that you found that was just a terrific stock. But the big wave overwhelmed the research. So that ETFs today, I think, in combination with other derivatives, offer the greatest threat. We've seen this in portfolio insurance. For those listeners that were around in 1987, there was something called portfolio insurance, was a fabulous idea. And the idea was basically when the stocks went down enough, everyone would sell, except the door wasn't big enough. Well, the same thing's going to happen in ETFs. Money is now tied up in ETFs by good-hearted investors that think they're going to hold it for 50 years. But when it's down 26% and it's your life savings, you're going to sell it, and you're selling it's going to cause the next person to sell it, and the door's going to get very narrow. And regardless how good your stock is, and then I'll finish in a minute, it's going to get killed. This year, 22% of the entire market rally since the day Trump was elected is accounted for by five stocks. So it is no longer a market of stocks anymore. It's a market of money flowing into, in that case, it was the FANG group of stocks or whatever the group of stocks are. So that's the second thing that have hurt hedge funds. The third thing was the simple ego. I actually ran a test last Christmas. Last Christmas, not a particularly good year. And I called each one of our 39 hedge funds. We have a number of groups of 12. And every one of the hedge fund managers was in St. Bart's or the equivalent thereof. Now, I'm not making that up. That's the truth. When I started my hedge fund, I was there over Christmas and New Year's. That was a very busy time. So people just get older, they get lazier. And the final thing, every great hedge fund person has closed his hedge fund and then come back. That's Warren Buffett, Stan Druckenmiller, Julian Robertson, George Soros. And the reason is, after you're right 4, 5, 6, 7 times in a row, you can't help but make that eighth bet a big one. It's just human nature.
Is that true for marriage too?
You can't afford the eighth marriage.
That's a good
call.
You know, there's one other thing that I think is we should add to it too, and that is there are smart people. There are people smarter than most. And when there were 10 or 15 or 20 hedge funds, you could find 10 or 20, you know, absolutely brilliant people. But there are thousands of them now.
Doing the same thing. Richard Rainwater, who lived here in Santa Barbara, said to me, Fred, that's the easiest business in the world you're going into. You find the 10 best, you forget the rest. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of always been my motto. When in the letter I wrote two weeks ago, I said our unique competency is we really had the best, the superstar managers, but those were a dozen out of 70.
And everyone else now is copying them. So the arbitrages are less available.
Well, there's a lot of breakaways. That's what happens. You work for someone and then you start and open your own fund.
You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Take a look under your bed. find stuff under there? What about jobs? No? Now try your basement. There's a pair of overalls that, overall, you're not so into anymore. A perfectly good laptop that hasn't seen your lap in months. And even more stuff, but still no jobs? Well, you really have both. See, stuff is defined as household articles considered as a group. Sometimes this stuff is no longer needed. Wait, no longer needed? That can't be right. Because remember those jobs you were looking for? Those are really needed. And they're the stuff inside your stuff. Even inside that winter coat that moved with you to Phoenix. Our job is to unlock those jobs. And it starts when you donate your stuff to your local Goodwill. Here's how we do it. When you donate to Goodwill, we sell your stuff to provide job training for people right here in your community. So just by teaming up with Goodwill, you help create jobs. And isn't that worth parting with the leftover keytar from your 80s cover band? Goodwill. Donate stuff, create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.
The Foundation for Santa Barbara City College is a nonprofit organization which supports our own Santa Barbara City College. The Foundation for Santa Barbara City College, or SBCC, funds scholarships, childcare, book grants, and other programs. Without these, many students simply would not be able to attend college. There is an amazing range of academic and vocational studies offered at City College which encourage students to find their passion and their talents. As a donor to the foundation, you have the power to change lives. Please help our community college by donating to the Foundation for SBCC. Call 730-4401 or visit us at sbccfoundation.org to find out how you can help. That's 730-4401 or sbccfoundation.org.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arnaldi's Cafe, one of Santa Barbara's oldest and most intimate restaurants since 1937, located on the corner of Olive and Coda Street in downtown Santa Barbara.
And if you're just joining us, we have Fred Schumann, the chairman of Archstone Partners, which is a hedge fund of tongue twister. And if you're just joining us, we were talking before the break, Fred, that you wrote a letter to your investors. And what did this letter say?
Okay, I have been in the business for 55 years. Artstone is 27 years old, and Artstone had one of the leading positions in this industry because we were early. And we had had what, by all accounts, was a successful run. We virtually never made an outgoing phone call. We had no sales force. We grew from $16 million to $5.5 billion. And we had a good record. I was sitting around here during what was not our best winter in Santa Barbara, really seriously frustrated. And the thing that really got me the most frustrated was reading that BlackRock was about to let a number of its security analysts go and replace them with robots. This was not a joke. And I began to think that between ETFs and robots, and I read an article that Millennium has 500 PhDs in 15 countries trying to get a small advantage. They earned 3% last year. Didn't really seem like a good risk reward. I visited Renaissance, and I visited all the rapid trading funds. They do more information per day. They process more information per day than NASA. 70 to 75% of the trading on the stock exchange is initiated and completed within 1 minute. And it occurred to me that what I did, the way we manage money, all the things we've been talking about up till now, was not going to be worth the fees. I could not tell people that the risk-adjusted return that I was almost certain they would get over the next 5 years would justify the fees we charged. And I decided that in the next 4 months, I would return all of their money to them. And if I get lucky, it'll be the ninth year without a decline.
Right.
Yeah, and I just want to add here that, and we talk about integrity. This is an amazing letter and decision that Fred made, because Fred had a very profitable business, and he chose not to sell it, just to close it, even though it was still profitable.
And the reason, and the reality is he could have gotten a lot of money if he did sell it.
And the reason he chose not to is he didn't feel that it was right to have his clients who would have stayed on not get their money's worth. And, you know, people talk about Wall Street being a bunch of self-interested people who, you know, break up the society because all they're interested in themselves. And Fred has basically broken that rule. It's just an amazing thing, and it just shows you the character Fred Schumann has.
Absolutely.
So what I've decided to do is open up a fund of funds hedge fund, because I don't have the same.
There's all these people around looking for a place,
looking for a new place to go.
They're all looking for a place to go.
Thank you, Neil. That's very nice of you. Okay.
So you know, this whole, you know, idea of fast trading is not investing. You know, one of the things about investing is the definition from 1937, Graham and Dodd's first edition, in that investing is buying a share of a company with the expectation that its long-term earnings, discounted back with a discount rate that's appropriate, will show a positive return. And trading for a millisecond is a different animal completely. So, you know, one of the things one has to think about is, are you interested in playing on a field where a substantial part of the action are people in a different business and a different...
And if I could add something, these people have an interest in causing ignition, fires. There's nothing better than a bad earnings report, and instead of a stock going down a point, it would really be great if they could make it go down 12 points, because they would be out down 6 points and on to something completely different. So it's terrifying to individuals. I personally bought Bristol-Myers this year. They failed to get approval for a drug. The stock fell 30%. It's been a long time since I've lost 30% in a stock. In the old days, there would have been a filter, and on the way down, it would have gone down 5%, 3%, 6%. So on and so forth. So you're quite right, Neil. But they have a very good business. There's a company called Virtu that's been in business for a long time that's never had a losing day, not one, because they play for nickels and dimes.
But what's the consequence to society? You know, if you look at the entire disparity of wealth in this country, the question is, what does it do to the country and the fabric of our society in general? And the fact that Virtu or Renaissance can have good years is not the point of a capital market. The idea of a capital market was to provide the fuel for growth, which was to provide capital for businesses. They're not interested in that. They're interested in using computer techniques to find a way of making, you know, a fraction of a point. And, you know, the reality is that at some point they'll be hoisted by their own petard, because just like hedge funds started doing the same thing, there's going to be such a large number. Now, maybe not so much, because it's so hard to get into that business and it's so expensive to have 500 PhDs, but I can't believe that it's going to be sustainable. And, you know, we talk about the crash that may happen with the ETFs. What happens here, where liquidity dries up, because most of the liquidity is provided by these people.
And computers can figure out what other computers are doing. So this is not far-fetched that somebody's going to get a handle on this, and then it's going to spread, and that really will bring it to its knees.
Okay, so what do we do now?
So aside from the high-frequency trading, because, you know, that's not we're not going to solve that on the air today, what do you think, where do you see the world today? Where do you see it on a macro level in terms of investing and companies?
I wish I could give you an answer, but one of the nice things about a fund of hedge funds is you pick the 12 smartest people you know. You don't let them collude. You don't let them talk to each other. You know they're competitive. And you figure that they're going to make a better decision than you, or else you would charge $2.20, which I don't. So I don't mean to be humble, but right now my own feelings, and I'm not sure it's not because of age and because of the success, et cetera, is that bonds eventually, if the world's going to get better, interest rates are going to rise, and bonds are not. So fixed income looks tricky. My real estate friends are selling, not buying. So looks like real estate with interest rates as low as they are is fully priced. I'm not able to invest in a whole plethora of other kinds of things. And I think stocks without a correction have no margin of safety. So here's what I'm doing. It's called VRDNs. I wouldn't do them if I were you. They are triple tax-free, 1 to 3 day municipal paper. And I get a grand. Last week, I got 90 basis points. And I'm just going to sit there and wait till the opportunity looks better to me. And it's very hard to do.
Well, there's always, you can always invest in AM radio.
Said from the man with two radio shows.
Right.
This week. So back to the serious of what do you think about the Trump bump? Do you think it is a Trump bump, or do you just think it was priced into the market with cash on the sidelines?
I think it was probably, first of all, the Trump bump is speculative in that everything he says is far from happening. And therefore, the level of enthusiasm that follows what he says rather than what he does is the margin of fright to me. So the Trump bump to me was America's need to catch up, the people's need to catch up. They've been out for 10 years, and it's just a flow of capital thing. And the fact is, he does speak like he's going to be good for business, and all these things are very attractive sounding. By the time they happen, the market will be overpriced.
But it's not. He said this week, basically through his tax plan, that his first step is going to be reduce taxes so much that there'll be no money left for the stimulus. And I believe the stimulus package was what was driving the market on a fundamental basis. So in a way, what he's showing people is that the Trump bump doesn't exist. And to me, that's the scariest part, besides everything else.
Neil, have they addressed bringing back all the money from overseas yet?
Yes, they're going to have a holiday.
10%. Well, they didn't say. A full holiday or 10%.
Well, they didn't say. Because
that can make a difference. Yeah. I mean, if they then say, you have to reinvest it in.
Well, they didn't say that either.
No, they didn't. But I heard today
The
possibility that it'll have to go to infrastructure or something, or there'll be a variation of things. So,
That seems very uncapitalistic, though, to dictate if you repatriate.
By the way, I'm sorry I'm interrupting you.
Oh, no,
we like interrupting.
But people who own things, I would tell them to keep it, because you don't ever make the kind of money you make going towards the last blast. So as it gets to silly, take a little more. But don't, because you just believe what I said, go out and sell everything. And even my hedge funds are not going to be unwound till the end of the year. So last month was a wonderful month, and we participated. No one can call when the bell rings. We don't get a telegram from.
The market's a leading indicator.
To point out, if the repatriation requires an investment in infrastructure, I'm not sure Apple's going to invest its $48 trillion or $1 billion worth of money in building bridges and roads. You're listening to Money Talk on the Santa Barbara News Press Radio Station, and we'll be right back with our final segment.
For prospective homebuyers, one of the most important steps of the loan process is getting clear and honest information from someone who will speak plainly and truthfully about loan programs and options.
Hello, I'm Kelly Marsh, the branch manager of Broadview Mortgage in Santa Barbara, where our highly skilled and experienced team takes great pride in helping clients obtain home financing with honest, knowledgeable, fast, friendly, and efficient service. As a Santa Barbara area native who has spent the past 19 years in the mortgage industry and has closed over 4,000 loans, I'd appreciate the opportunity to earn your business and invite you to visit BroadviewSB.com or call my office at 805-563-1100 to learn more about how Broadview Mortgage can help you determine the best way to manage mortgage debt to achieve a more stable financial future.
Licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act, license number 813G136, NMLS number 170528, an equal housing lender.
It's a fact. Successful wealth management is built on strategies that focus on the big picture, take a long-term view, and establish deep and valued relationships. Hello, I'm Diane Duva, founding partner at Arlington Financial Advisors, Santa Barbara's trusted family guide, empowering you to make more informed and confident decisions. At Arlington Financial Advisors, we bring order and balance to your financial life by monitoring and managing risk so you can focus on your work, family, and enjoying the moment. We are a fully independent firm offering strategic financial planning, estate and tax planning, and private money management. Our plans and portfolios are handcrafted using a rigorous and disciplined approach, supported by a consistent yet highly personalized client experience. Our clients look to Arlington Financial Advisors as a home away from home, a comfortable place to protect what they've accomplished while they prepare for what comes next. Please visit ArlingtonFinancialAdvisors.com or call me, Diane Duva, at 805-699-7300.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence. And you going to say anything?
You said during the break you have a question. Go ahead.
I have a question. I thought you'd introduce our guest. Fred Schumann is the chairman of Archstone Partners, and we're lucky to have him here today. And he promised in the last segment he would tell everyone exactly how to make money and guarantee it.
And his compliance department's hair is raising on the back there.
We have very little time, but the most pressing question for all of us former New Yorkers is, and now Californians, this new tax plan does not seem to be favorable to the blue states. What are we going to do?
Actually, my new favorite word is confiscatory. It's only to some of us. I know, that's a good one. Firstly, it's only to a very elite number of people who have very high earned income, and then they lose their state tax deduction, which in New York is 17% of your income. So it's a very material number.
In California, it's 13, so it's meaningful.
It's very meaningful. Now, the real issue is what we were talking about before. Is just whether or not this plan has even the slightest chance of passing. And it is doubtful to me now that it will without some changes. And the key assumption is their belief, and we've heard this is Arthur Laffer's theory, that if you cut taxes, people will get richer, spend more money, and therefore you'll get more taxes. And that's the old story of politicians do anything that isn't proven for 5 years after they're out of office. So this does feel a lot like just that. I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think the states' rights people, which really are supposed to be Republicans, are going to permit certain states to be abused at the expense of others.
Yeah, it should be interesting to see for sure.
Well, Fred, what's so interesting is when Coors beer was not sold in New York in the 1970s and had to be allegedly frozen, people who flew first class were asked to bring back a case of Coors because it was so delicious and you couldn't buy it in New York. Turns out that Coors wasn't that good. And so people tend to want what they can't have. So I am assuming now your phone's going to start ringing and want to invest with you because you're not doing it anymore. Fred, it's wonderful that you came today. It was a great show. You're a great guy.
Thank you so much for being here with us. We really appreciate it.
And you've been listening to Money Talk. And we'll see you all back here next week.